From Warren to Carlisle, Hermitage to Lebanon, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, state regulations were loosened to make telehealth services available to Pennsylvanians during the COVID-19 pandemic. But those changes have now expired, cutting access to health care. Thomas Kimbrell from the Americans for Prosperity Foundation has details. PennDOT plans to spend $200 million to expand service on an Amtrak rail line that has seen a dramatic drop in ridership. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi are here with an Allegheny Institute report. And there is a growing disconnect between the concerns of Pennsylvania voters and the issues being addressed by lawmakers at both the federal and state levels. Is anyone actually listening? Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Thomas Kimbrell in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. In an effort to avoid another contentious primary election for United States Senator, the Republican Party of Pennsylvania this past week issued an early endorsement of David McCormick to become the party's nominee to take on incumbent U.S. Senator Robert P. Casey, Jr. McCormick lost the 2022 GOP nomination by less than 1,000 votes to Dr. Mehmet Oz, who went on to lose the seat to now U.S. Senator John Fetterman. The state GOP also issued early endorsements of State Treasurer Stacey Garrity and State Auditor General Tim DeFore, who are seeking re-election next year. The party delayed endorsing for State Attorney General until sometime after December 1st. That seat will be open, as Attorney General Michelle Henry is serving as a caretaker, completing the term of Josh Shapiro, who resigned when he became governor. In other political news, Republican Rob Bresnahan Jr., who is CEO of Kuharchik Construction, has announced plans to seek the Republican nomination to face incumbent Democratic Congressman Matt Cartwright. Cartwright represents a northeastern Pennsylvania district that includes Scranton and surrounding areas. Cartwright has been a top target for Republicans and secured re-election 2 years ago by a slim margin over Republican Jim Bognit. Meanwhile, the 10th congressional district seat in South Central Pennsylvania, held by Congressman Scott Perry, continues to draw candidates seeking the Democratic nomination. The latest entry into that primary is Janelle Stelson, who recently left her job as an anchor for WGAL News 8. Stelson does not currently live in the district, although that is not a requirement to enter the race. Until recently, she was a registered Republican and switched to compete in what is becoming an increasingly crowded primary. An open seat on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court is drawing financial interest from outside the Commonwealth. Carolyn Carluccio, who is president judge of the Montgomery County Court of Common Pleas, is competing for the seat with Daniel McCaffrey, who currently serves as a Pennsylvania Superior Court judge. The Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee is attempting to put its thumb on the scales by making what it terms a six-figure investment in the race. Democrats currently hold a 4-2 majority on the court with one seat vacant due to the death of former Chief Justice Max Baer. Even if Republican Carluccio wins, that will not change the majority this year, but a Democratic victory would cement that majority for the long term. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court has injected itself into a wide range of political issues, including implementing by judicial fiat a congressional redistricting plan favorable to Democratic candidates. The seat will top this November's general election ballot. Questions are swirling following the resignation of Mike Verb from Governor Josh Shapiro's cabinet in the wake of sexual harassment allegations. Verb was Secretary of Legislative Affairs and resigned without stating a reason. Now State Senators Kristen Phillips Hill and Tracy Pennycook are questioning Shapiro's handling of the situation, which has been brewing for months and for which there has been little to no transparency. Senate President Pro Tem Kim Ward said she was, quote, appalled that Verb was allowed to remain in his influential role long after the allegations were made. The senators are attacking a presumed non-disclosure agreement, which is preventing details of the settlement from being made public. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Giving residents of Penns Woods access to out-of-state telehealth providers was crucial in weathering the COVID-19 pandemic, but regulation waivers have expired and the result, a loss of healthcare services. Here with details is Thomas Kimbrell. He is an investigative analyst with the Americans for Prosperity Foundation. Tom, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Thomas, before we talk about the particular policy problem and its implications that we have here in Pennsylvania relative to telehealth, explain to our listeners what we mean by that term. What is telehealth?
Telehealth is a method where patients can access their healthcare providers via different technology. So it could be on the telephone, or it could be through video calls. And it's something that's been made possible by modern technology, and it's often a convenient way for people to access their healthcare providers. And it increases access to healthcare providers. And so it's especially convenient for people who live in rural areas that might have to travel long distances to receive in-person care for things that they could handle over the phone or a video call, and also for people with chronic conditions that need to get checkups regularly, but they may not need to be in person for all of those checkups.
So we have this telehealth service available to us now, Thomas, because of all the expansion that we've had in terms of technology. And of course, efforts are underway in Pennsylvania to expand broadband access, so rural areas will have even more access to this. But let's go back a few years here to 2020. The COVID-19 pandemic hit. The demand for healthcare services skyrocketed. What changes were made in telehealth rules to allow us to cope with that situation?
In March 2020, the governor issued an emergency order that allowed for out-of-state healthcare providers to treat patients in Pennsylvania via telehealth. And this was necessary because the healthcare facilities were being flooded with patients. And a lot of people who may have, they don't have emergency conditions, but need to continue to receive care or get checkups. At the time, it wasn't really best for them to come into the facilities. And so the governor issued this order that allowed for out-of-state providers to treat patients in Pennsylvania. However, when the public health emergency ended, those emergency waivers for out-of-state providers expired as well.
Why were we actually, and this may be more of a political policy question here, but why were we in a situation in 2020 when, obviously, Tom, we had widespread access to computer technology, cell phone technology? Is Pennsylvania unique among states in having not already had this service available? Why were we so far behind the curve when 2020 turned around?
Legislation tends to lag behind technology in general, and there's kind of a hodgepodge of different laws and regulations across the country as far as allowing access to telehealth across state lines. And so there's legislation right now in the Pennsylvania legislature to allow that, and there is similar legislation in a number of states.
And so during the COVID-19 pandemic era, we did loosen up the requirements, the restrictions on telehealth. That's starting to change now that the pandemic is over. Tell us what's been happening lately with these licensing laws that had been relaxed that now are no longer going to be relaxed.
Yeah, they expired when the public health emergency ended. People in Pennsylvania who had established patient-provider relationships with these practitioners from out of state, they lost access to their healthcare provider.
So now we have this situation where these licensure laws are going back into effect after having been suspended during COVID. Is there any particular area of healthcare where this is having an outsized impact or more of an impact than others?
Well, you know, that's something that we at Americans for Prosperity Foundation set out to figure out. We wanted to know what the impact of losing this expanded access to health care is that Pennsylvania's had during the public health emergency. And so we filed a right to know law request with the Pennsylvania State Department to get records about the number of out-of-state practitioners that received emergency waivers to treat patients in Pennsylvania during the emergency. And we started to get some of those records back.
So taking a look at those records, is there any particular area where this is having an outsized impact in terms of healthcare? What type of healthcare services, were they respiratory, were they mental health? What sort of services are we talking about here?
Pennsylvania has 15 health licensing boards. They range from psychology to nursing, physicians, speech-language pathology, therapy, all the way to veterinary medicine. And so we asked for the list of practitioners who received the emergency waivers across all 15 boards. And so we've received a few back. And right now we're seeing that around 650 occupational therapists had received emergency waivers to treat patients in Pennsylvania that can no longer do that. We also found that about 900 speech-language pathologists received emergency waivers, and they can no longer treat patients in Pennsylvania. And there's still 10 outstanding medical licensing boards for which we have not yet received records. The Pennsylvania State Department, we should be getting more records this week. So we'll put those out when we get them. But we expect that number, you know, we're already at over 1,500 healthcare providers, and we expect that number is going to be in the several thousands of healthcare providers that received emergency waivers, because I expect some of the larger ones will be in nursing and physicians, and we haven't received those records yet.
Let's follow up a bit on nursing. We have a nursing shortage in Pennsylvania already here, Tom. Is this going to make that nursing shortage even worse? Especially because here we are in early mid-October, and we are approaching the flu season, RSV, resurgence to some degree of COVID cases. Could we possibly find ourselves over the next few months in a situation where the health system becomes stressed, especially when it comes to nurses?
Nursing is a unique case in Pennsylvania in that in 2021, during the public health emergency, the state legislature actually passed the Nursing License Compact Act, which brought the state of Pennsylvania into the Nursing License Compact, which is an agreement between 40 states that they will recognize other states' nursing licenses. And so nurses licensed to practice medicine through the compact can practice in any of those 40-plus states, member states. That was just implemented last month. It's unclear why it took 2 years for the governor to implement the law, but that should help, hopefully, alleviate the nursing shortage in Pennsylvania. The shortages in Pennsylvania healthcare go beyond nursing, and so we would like to see that kind of access expanded across the industry.
Certainly, breaking down barriers to telehealth and other healthcare is in the best interest of all residents of Penns Woods here. We have been talking with Thomas Kimbrell, who is an investigative analyst with the Americans for Prosperity Foundation, looking into telehealth and the resumption of restrictions on interstate use of medical professionals. Tom, tell us a little bit about Americans for Prosperity Foundation. Also, where can folks go on the web to learn more?
Americans for Prosperity Foundation is a nonpartisan educational organization, and we do public records requests, and we look at public data to try to educate the public on good public policy. And you can learn more about our work and our work in Pennsylvania at AmericansForProsperity.org.
Thomas Kimbrell from the Americans for Prosperity Foundation. Tom, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Thank you for having me.
Ridership on Amtrak's Pennsylvania line plummeted during COVID and has not recovered. So why is PennDOT planning to spend $200 million to expand service? For answers, we turn to Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi and the Allegheny Institute Report.
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is the Executive Director of the Allegheny Institute, Frank Gamrat. Frank, your most recent policy brief, which is available at our website, www.alleghenyinstitute.org, talks about an agreement that was announced in the newspapers, has some history that you've written about before, and it involves the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation and Norfolk Southern. Could you give our listeners an idea what this agreement is?
Yeah, sure, Eric. What we saw in the newspaper was PennDOT had approached Norfolk Southern and basically asked how much would it cost to do some improvements on the rail line. And so the question probably came up over looking back at the East Palestine wreck in February, where Norfolk Southern had the big derailment and now they're spending all kinds of money on cleanup. The response was, oh, a cool $200 million, thank you. And PennDOT said, sure, why not? It's in spare change. It must be in our couch cushions. When Norfolk Southern came back with that request for $200 million, they also said, well, in addition to safety improvements, we're also going to allow for one more run of the Pennsylvania rail line on Amtrak. Now, this is where that really caught our attention, because Amtrak's Pennsylvania line, which travels 444 miles from Pittsburgh to New York and back, runs through a lot of Pennsylvania cities, Harrisburg, Philadelphia being the two most prominent, and then up to New York via New Jersey. About 10 years ago, Amtrak went to PennDOT and said, we would like $5.7 million to subsidize the rail line that runs to and from Pittsburgh to New York. And of course, the Commonwealth gave it. So here they are 10 years later. Now we're saying, well, we'd like to do that again. Well, this time we'll add a second line and everything will be just wonderful. And of course, a lot of the railroad romantics are out there clickety-clackety and chugging their way through their memory banks that this is a great thing for Pennsylvania. And one editorial in the local newspaper said, oh, this will be a boon for the economy. So we kind of disputed that just based on some basic service facts.
What are the most recent ridership numbers on this Pennsylvania route?
And that's a great question. That's what we sort of dug into. There's two lines that run through the Pittsburgh terminal, Union Terminal, and that's the Pennsylvania, aforementioned Pennsylvania, that goes from Pittsburgh through Harrisburg to New York, and then the Capitol that runs from D.C. to Chicago. And the good folks at Norfolk Southern called that the Premium Corridor, that all kinds of stuff has to go through New York to Chicago. That's why we need to spend this money. But when you look at Amtrak service in Pittsburgh, when we did this first in 2013, we noted that 140,000 people using the Pittsburgh terminal that year. 2015, it sort of peaked at 147,500. And then it just started to slowly fall. Ended up at 136,000 in 2018, 129,000 in 2019. Then, of course, the pandemic showed up and things changed. Specifically, riders using that station in Pittsburgh were only 75,800. So that's a 40% some odd drop in passengers from 2019 to 2020. And then in 21, it fell even further to 71,500. Now, that's the latest data available. We don't have 2022 data, but it's pretty sure bet that the ridership has not risen back to those 2019 levels. Now we look at the Pennsylvania specifically, the train that runs from, of course, Pittsburgh to New York. And that train in 2015 had 231,700 passengers using it. Again, all the stations, all it through New York. It dropped down to 212,700 in 2019, then down to 127,700 in 2020. And it ticked up a real little bit, 128,500 in 2021. Now, when we looked at the three main stations along the line in Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, and Harrisburg, Philadelphia had the largest amount in 2019. 82,000 people boarded the Pennsylvania or disembarked the Pennsylvania in 2019. Pittsburgh, 78,299, and Harrisburg, 42,621. And it fell dramatically in Philadelphia. It went from 82,000 to 47,000. In Pittsburgh, 78,000 to 43,000. Harrisburg, 40,000 to 28,000. Now, I know there's a lot of numbers in there, and for a lot of people to think, well, what's the big deal? You're talking about a 40% drop in ridership on this one line. Now, it bounced up a little bit in 2021, another 4% per each station, but you're not seeing people using this line in droves, and I don't think it warrants a second line coming through Pittsburgh. You've got fewer passengers using the train, and adding a second train is just going to split them up even more, and the usage is going to fall even further.
When you compare this mode of transportation to others, let's say you're going across the state of Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. how do they compare?
Right. We looked at two things, of course. One was the cost. If you go on an economy line, one-way ticket from Pittsburgh to Philadelphia, I just looked at the two Commonwealth endpoints, 1 month out, it's $86 one way. If you look at cost of driving the turnpike, the tolls are $35 one way. Now, of course, that's Pittsburgh to Philadelphia. Now, even if you toss in a tank of gas, you're probably looking at about $45. So the costs are probably pretty comparable. Now, if you were to go on the train via business class, it's $121 one way. So driving in your car makes a little more sense. But really where it comes down to it is when you're in the car, it's about a five-hour ride. When you're on the train, it's a 7.5-hour ride. And as others have pointed out to me once this brief was released, if you're on the passenger train, that passenger train has to give right away to freight trains. So sometimes you could be on those tracks a very long time, depending on the number of freight trains or the size of the freight trains. Furthermore, you have to find a way to the station. If you're living in the city of Pittsburgh, it's a pretty easy walk. But if you're from other parts of Allegheny County, you've got to have someone drive you down there, drop you off, maybe take a ride share, a taxi cab. And then when you get into Philadelphia or Harrisburg, you've got to find someone to pick you up and take you to your destination, ride share, taxi, friend, whatever. And you don't have the use of a vehicle to get around if you need to get around. So a car just offers more convenience. It's less time and probably less cost than it is taking the train. There's a reason why these passenger numbers have fallen and have not come back. You know, people prefer the comfort and the safety and the use of their own vehicle.
So bottom line, should Pennsylvania taxpayers be involved in this agreement?
Absolutely not. These are private lines. Amtrak is a publicly subsidized rail line. We're already paying for it. We shouldn't be paying for it even further. As far as the safety on the rail, on the freight rail lines are concerned, again, Norfolk Southern owns these tracks. They own the right-of-way. They own the process. They need to make sure that the improvements are made. The executive for Norfolk Southern says they've got 800 customers that rely on them, on their trains going across Pennsylvania. Well, if you've got 800 customers using those trains, they should shoulder the burden, not Pennsylvania taxpayers.
Frank, great stuff as always, and you can find this brief at our website. For Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi. This has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
Can you hear me now? It's not just a catchy cell phone slogan. It applies to lawmakers at both the federal and state levels who are not hearing the concerns of their constituents. Emily Green of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Government officials are elected to serve the people they represent and scale the voices of those raising issues in the community. But is this system working? Turn on any news channel, whichever you choose. Scroll through the news sites. What you'll see are companies feeding narratives that tell a story that only partially articulates the issues facing the hardworking people of the Commonwealth. You'll find stories about political infighting, celebrity news, and Washington happenings that don't directly impact the lives of Pennsylvanians from Pittsburgh to Harrisburg and beyond. If Washington isn't listening to we the people, are the needs of hardworking Pennsylvanians being left off the table for consideration? When asked about the current state of our economic climate, almost two-thirds of Americans believe that the government is spending too much, according to a poll recently observed by the AP-NORC. This should come as no surprise, given the Biden administration's over $4 trillion in spending since the 46th president of the United States took office. Undoubtedly, this increase in spending has led to the increase in grocery bills, which are up 4.3% from 2021 to 2022. The Biden administration's focus on centralized planning through massive spending bills disguised as workforce hubs has led to the country's economic downturn, though this focus is hardly mentioned in day-to-day reporting on mainstream sites. This goes without saying, motorists are feeling pain at the pump. Without a doubt, the over $1.50 more per gallon national average price is hurting consumers of fuel, from Florida to California to right here in the Commonwealth. Congress can take action today to address rising gas prices, such as passing H.R. 1 or the Lower Energy Costs Act, but the status quo and unwillingness from Congress to take swift action on rising energy costs is causing Pennsylvania consumers to make critical trade-offs when it comes to putting gas in their cars or putting food on their family tables. In fact, according to a poll commissioned by YouGov, 54% of Americans believe reeling back regulations to domestic energy production will directly impact the negative effects of inflation. However, it's rare to hear Washington come to the table to discuss course-correcting the prices that have led to this major rise in fuel prices. Lastly, Pennsylvanians are fed up with the status quo when it comes to their health care. In a recent poll commissioned by Americans for Prosperity PA through Susquehanna Polling and Research in May of 2023, it was found that 67% of respondents in Pennsylvania believe that government should allow for more choice in their health care, so to drive down the cost of out-of-pocket prices. Consumers want a personal option to health care, though you rarely see the concept of free market health care reported in the news. Congress and Harrisburg lawmakers can move swiftly to address the concerns of the people when it comes to healthcare, so long as the ideas of choice and a personal touch, for example, telehealth services, are top of mind. The people of Pennsylvania have spoken, but are Harrisburg and Washington there to hear their concerns? We must do better to address the consensus of the people of Pennsylvania, which is to get government bureaucracy out of the way so that they may chart their own course towards the American dream. For the sake of the people of this great Commonwealth, I do hope their officials are listening. You can take action today to raise your concerns with the current economic crisis by joining our community of freedom fighters at AmericansForProsperity.org. Sign your name to a petition to send an email directly to your representation in Harrisburg and Washington. Again, that is AmericansForProsperity.org. This is Emily Green, Deputy State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 28 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WROV-FM in Dubois, along with WKMC-AM, WBRX-FM, and WBXQ-FM in Altoona, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. We'll be right back.
Thank you.